papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery.
The election is over. It's time to analyze how the media handled things. Welcome to The Media Project. I'm Rex Smith of the Upstate American, formerly editor of the Times Union, here with my colleagues to talk about the media in light of the election just passed. Here is Judy Patrick, formerly editor of the Daily Gazette of Schenectady, now vice president of the New York Press Association.
You know, can I report that last week I was very critical of the Washington Post and I announced that I had canceled my subscription. I want you to know that I have actually renewed my subscription at this point. I believe their work is very important going forward.
Very well. We're proud of you, Judy, actually on both counts.
I should also note that they lowered my price, so I'm saving $8 a month.
That's great. It's a wonderful thing. Barbara Lombardo is here, formerly executive editor of the Saratogian and the Record of Troy, now teaching at UAlbany.
Hello.
And at the end of the table, if you could see us in the studio here, is Miles Reed, the editor of the Daily Gazette.
Hello. Good to be here. I just like to report that I never canceled my Washington Post subscription because I think they do a great job holding people accountable in government at all levels.
Well, you know, that actually brings up what I'd really like to do to start off this program today. I'd like to ask you all to respond to something. My contention is that unlike all the mea culpas of the media from 2016, when Donald Trump was still rather new to the scene after riding down his golden escalator in 2015 and running his campaign the way he did, and the media in those days really gave a lot of airtime to this guy in a way that I think we didn't see this time. My contention is that the fact-based news media, by which I mean the realm in which we all have labored, did a good job in this campaign, that there was appropriate attention to the issues, appropriate warnings of what Donald Trump represented to the tenets of democracy and to the traditions of our republic. And notwithstanding that, Donald Trump won. So my general contention is that I think the press acquitted itself rather well. Am I wrong about that?
I wouldn't give them an A+. I'd say better than in 2016, better than 2020, but that there was still too much focus on polling, on horse race, and that there was a blindness in the media to what was going on in our country. So we were reporting polling results. We did a good job, the bigger media, I would say, did a good job, as you're suggesting, on letting the public know where the candidates stand on the issue, what are the positions of Donald Trump, and what dangers do they provide us for the time to come, and what were lies. We were not afraid to call a lie a lie. So I think all of that was good, and exposing a lot of things in detail. It wasn't hard to find that kind of information. But we obviously didn't have our pulse on the nation. For the results of the election where the voting was down and where popular vote went to Trump, I wish we had figured out how to do reporting along the way that would have let us know that was happening.
Would that have made a difference? That's what you're saying is more horse race. So you can't criticize the horse race reporting as being too effusive and then say we didn't know
it's
it was coming.
It's not horse racing. It's how people are feeling.
I think at least on the local level, we struggled with, I think we did a better job capturing what voters actually think out in the communities that we cover. And we made a concerted effort to really find out what their views were. But it was a huge challenge because so often we'd talk to voters and they would just repeat disinformation that was pretty common. And I know Judy's talked about this on some earlier shows, but we took that. We did the best we could to try to fact check. If a voter said something about how, you know, President Trump is really good in business, he knows how to run a business, we would try to objectively fact check that and say, well, his companies have had 5-6 bankruptcies and try to balance it. But it was still a huge challenge because I've never seen anything like the disinformation in terms of what we see on social media.
I give us a B+. I think that oh, especially the last 4 weeks, the election is razor thin, is too so close, and it turned out to be not close at all. One thing I thought we did really a fine job of holding Trump more accountable than we did the last time around, but I think we tended to overlook some of Kamala Harris's shortcomings. I think that we did not hold her feet to the fire too much about not answering real questions from real reporters. I can't tell you the number of times I was disappointed when she was asked, well, what would you do about increased prices? And she would say, well, I would go after price gouging. I wanted more detail on that. And I wasn't getting that. I think there was some wishful thinking, you know, they would focus on the fact that she wore these sneakers, or they would, you know, focus on certain parts about her energy. And I thought that that gave people on the left the wrong notion about what was happening. Was that joyful campaign? Was that a real movement happening? And I think Harris would have been better served, and Democrats would have been better served if reporters had held her more accountable for what she was saying.
Do you think by any chance that that is the case because of the fact that most reporters are to the left of the American people? And I would point out that becoming a journalist is a self-selection process, and we don't sit at the newsroom gate and only accept applications from reporters who have a liberal bias.
You're in, you're out.
Absolutely. Or I might say, just actually, by the way, in defense of journalists, that there is a bias for truth-telling in the mainstream media. So maybe that is why some people might say, well, there's a bias on the part of the press. But do you think that we do have a tendency to not pay attention to voices on the right?
Didn't you hear all the discussion of back that Kamala Harris has got that great ground game going, and they've got a, you know, they're canvassing, and they're knocking on a million doors, and oh, pish posh, the Trump people, they hired out, you know, they contracted this out, it's not going to work. I mean, I heard that a ton, and that was a focus of so many stories, and it turned out to be pretty wrong.
Well, it was true that she had more of a ground game, it just didn't count.
It didn't count. And, you know, it made some difference in some of the swing states, but maybe that was a poor focus. I think perhaps the reporters doing those stories and the editors who were authorizing them were listening to Democratic strategists too much.
Mm. Yeah, I definitely heard people criticizing, why are the journalists not asking tougher questions of Harris? I think what she did is a symptom of something we've seen for 30 years or so. The candidates just very much limit how much exposure they have. They want to control the message, and we in the media are still struggling to figure it out. I mean, Trump, at this point, it appears masterfully figured out, I'm going to go on these, you know, high popularity podcasts. Joe Rogan, he had J.D. Vance on there, and they cut out, you know, they're not talking to Peter Baker, and they're going to pick who they're going to talk to and control it. So I think we in the media have to do a better job going forward.
Boy, I'd like to know how to do that, because, I mean, you can't, when you listen to, who got shout outs from the podium in Trump's victory speech? The Nelk Boys, Aiden Ross, Theo Vaughn, never heard of, Bussin' with the Boys, as well as the powerful Joe Rogan, 30 million listeners, mostly bros, you know. So this was the manosphere where Donald Trump triumphed, and I don't know how to, as a journalist, how to contend with that.
I don't either, which is really a deflating, disappointing feeling of how do we reach people with the truth, and does the truth even matter?
Yeah.
That is the worst part of all of this, is that there are people who are okay with the things that Donald Trump really says, which we report.
And the fact is, fewer people follow the news. What was it, a couple of years ago, there was a study where people were asked, how closely do you follow the news? And 38% of Americans claimed that they follow the news very closely. I have two things to say about that. I think they might be fibbing. That is, but even if that number is true, that means 6 out of 10 don't follow the news very closely. And the question is what they consider news. So untruths may be what they think of as news.
Right. And even though Joe Rogan only has, I think it was 5% of the market, it's still 30 million people. And the things that are relayed through the right-wing media are then effectively shared through social media.
I think all of us need to put on our editor's hats and think about what we would do if a reporter came to us and said, oh, they won't talk to us, oh, they, you know, I can't get access. We would say, find a way to get access. I mean, editors and reporters need to work harder to make these things happen. I'm sure that they asked for these interviews. I'm sure they were denied. Well, you know, if you can't get the story one way, try to find another way to get the story.
I don't think the big problem is getting access. I think it's reaching the audience, that we're the conduit to get the news out, and how do we reach the people that should hear
it? Well, then, to that point, then, isn't it incumbent upon the legacy media, which we all represent, to figure out how to be more accessible? Do we need to be more entertaining? Do we need to be on platforms?
No, we need to sing. You can do it.
I don't know. Yeah, that would be it. I'm sure that everybody's going to just line up for that. Well, it's a good question. I mean, what kind of presentation would make important news something that people actually want to grab?
I think it goes back to the alternatives, podcasts, and finding some way to reach our readers. And we dabble in some of that. It's hard. It's hard to monetize that. So it's a high cost and not a lot of money coming in. But, I mean, you brought up Theo Von and some of these different alternative podcasters. If we can't crack that, it's going to, I think, repeat itself in another 4 years in the presidential election or 2 years in a congressional race, because just so many voters are getting their news that way. And Judy and I are actually mutual friends with somebody on Facebook who I think we both like and we're friends with. And she routinely would post things that Judy and I know not to be accurate. Judy tried her best to try to politely talk to her about it. And she just willfully was like, no, you're wrong. And this is somebody with a good job and a decent life and career. And how do we get past that?
Mm-hmm. I think that's really hard. And to face the fact that the legacy media don't have the influence they used to have is very hard for us, because we're struggling to survive, because a lot of the newsrooms have been so deeply deflated by the loss of advertising revenue, principally to the giant digital places, that is Facebook and Google, have 52% of all the digital advertising in the country right now. Another 12% goes to Google. So where do you get the crumbs of what's left to finance the journalism that depends upon now digital revenue primarily? That's really going to be difficult for the media going forward. You're still in the newsroom, you know, Miles. It's what are you going to do?
It's a big challenge. You brought up Google. I mean, we 4 years ago applied for and received some funding through the Google News Initiative, and that was promising. And I know a number of other smaller outlets.
What was it, $10,000 or $15,000?
You don't want to know, and I'm not going to talk
about it.
It wasn't a lot, and it wasn't meaningful. So they really, I think, have to, and in some places in Canada, Google's paying up a little bit, in California. But I think if we're going to make this work, that kind of model, somebody like the big ones, Facebook and Google, are going to have to pay, you know, for content. And we just got to sort of figure out that model. Because right now, especially looking at, you know, with the new Trump administration, if they're going to potentially be more aggressive in terms of cracking down on what journalists do on a day-to-day basis, there's going to be even more need.
They're certainly not going to crack down on the digital giants. I don't think the Trump administration will stand up for the media in the face of these giants. And whether federal courts will, if this happens via lawsuit, maybe there's a way to get some money out of the giants for the mainstream media, but I don't think that's the case.
I agree with both of you. And I think that one of the things that needs to be discussed in newsrooms is, in media companies, what are our goals? What are our objectives? What are we trying to accomplish? And that should be the overriding way to help us steer. What are we covering? How do we want to present it? And, you know, at the Saratogian, so small paper where you can affect change in your community, I felt it was an important part of our job to inform the public of what's going on, so that then they can be empowered to be what I'd like to call a catalyst for hopefully positive change. So are we trying to, in the bigger scope of the media, trying to inform the public of, say, was the dangers of Trump, which was done on the editorial page, or also just done in stories by exposing dangers of Trump, to inform readers so that they could be catalysts for change? Didn't work.
Not quite. You know, the real tangible threats that can emerge from the Trump White House now, we need to consider. That is the fact that reporters could be barred from the White House entirely. The daily press briefing that is a standard of how media covers the White House could become a thing of the past. Press credentials could be denied from any news organization that happens to tick off Donald Trump at any given time.
In fact, he denied press credentials to a few organizations covering his campaign conclusion at Mar-a-Lago. But let's just say that that's not entirely unusual for a politician to kind of try to ban a reporter they don't like. What is unusual is the fact that it might be pervasive, and it's the president.
Yes, exactly.
Right. Although you're right, Judy, when you said earlier that reporters find a way to get access, and attending the things like the briefings that are totally controlled by the administration, it is not a productive use of reporters' time.
Usually so. But, of course, you also have, as we've actually seen even here locally, officials will seize the phones of their staff to see who's been talking to reporters. That's why my former colleague Brendan Lyons at the Times Union, for example, would actually tell people in person, don't ever call my Times Union number. And when he would call them, he would go someplace where there was a neutral telephone. He used to, well, I'll tell his secret here. He went down Wolf Road to where there were house phones in the hotels. And he would call people from those house phones if they were sources inside agencies. That is going to have to be the kind of tactic that reporters use all the time in Washington.
Indeed. I think that's something that we all should be looking at, and especially the bigger organizations. You're going to have to be a lot more careful about what you do and how you collect information, how you deal with sources. Can I just say, this may be an unpopular opinion, but, you know, Trump is great clickbait. When Trump was in office the first time, subscriptions and visits to major news websites went through the roof, and I think we all enjoyed those increased clicks. I mean, you'll watch cable viewership will go up. There will be that commercial impact.
The Trump bump, they called it 8 years ago, right? Or will there be a Trump dump? That is, are people going to...
There's so many words that rhyme with
Isn't that
Trump?
Great? I mean, that's a really interesting point. And actually, the one good thing I would say about Donald Trump is that he's good for audience.
Yeah, and 10,000 of those clicks will get us a dime.
Yeah.
In some ways, it's a little demoralized to me because we do cover a lot of local news, as Barbara talked about. And we put a lot of time and resources and do our best. And our letters to the editor are still overwhelmingly about Trump or at least the presidential election. So there is a huge demand for news and talk of him.
I think there's actually a genuine threat to reporters who are out on the street covering things, because we have had some protection for reporters in the notion that you don't prosecute a reporter for pursuing a story, but I think there's every good chance that a reporter trying to get up close to something like a rally or an event happening could end up being prosecuted by a hostile administration.
We had a situation just this week where we'd come up with our game plan for the whole region in covering election night, and we'd assigned a number of reporters, and about half of our reporters are women. And we had one person assigned to cover a rally, and she came to us and said, I really don't feel safe at that. And we decided to, you know, move it out. You know, we obviously want to keep our people safe, but, you know, you can't deny the fact that there have been concerns and threats about, you know, the mainstream media fake news. We all hear that. I hear it every day. You're fake news. I don't trust you. So it's a big issue. And it would be even worse if now people start, you know, facing even more scrutiny in the next 4 years.
And if they get arrested, I mean, there is an increasing incidence of reporters trying to cover events being arrested. And especially at small news organizations just don't have the financial wherewithal to hire a lawyer to help these reporters get out of jail for just trying to do their job.
Another likely scenario, I think, well, maybe I shouldn't say likely, potential. Trump has talked about reforming libel laws, thinking that that's a good idea to get back at people who are covering him, perhaps not realizing that libel laws actually protected him from some of the things he said. He didn't succeed entirely. He did slander E. Jean Carroll, and there was a judgment against him for that. But it is entirely possible that in an effort to get back at the press, he could push through a compliant Congress, changes to libel laws that could disadvantage the press in trying to get truth.
Yep, I think that's a real fear. And I agree with Miles about on the local level, having reporters that are harassed by people who suddenly feel empowered, or more and more feel empowered to be nasty and even physically violent. It's frightening.
So just to talk about a little bit more about looking back, election night audiences were down from prior years, which is interesting. Television viewing dropped sharply. Now, maybe that's because an increasing share of people might have been getting the news digitally. That could be that that's not reflected, but it was the lowest percentage watching election coverage on a national election, according to Nielsen, since 1960. Only 22.6% of TV households were actually watching. Now, maybe that's all the Democrats in horror deciding to go to bed instead, but it does, again, reinforce that notion that the legacy media, newspapers, television, radio, don't have the hold on the audience, and that people are simply tuning out news.
One of the reasons for that could have been all the prognosticators were saying, oh, we're not going to have a result that night. So people were saying, well, why should I agonize over what was happening? I'll wake up in the morning and find out it's a better use of my time. That's what I did.
All that said, Steve Kornacki, John King, I mean, these guys are kind of amazing, right?
Steve Kornacki is terrific. And I'll admit to being enough of a politics and statistics geek that I am interested in being able to dissect what percentage of this population has voted and how did they go and what are the possibilities based on enrollment, how this undone district, how it could go. But it's also crazy to be posting election results when it's like, and with 5% of the district reporting, it doesn't make any sense. It's not relevant.
It makes viewers feel good if you watch them and you therefore feel smarter because you're absorbing what they're saying to you. Hey, wow, I really know something now. But this county level detail that they can bring to these stories, that requires a lot of advanced reporting. That requires actual work, research.
Yeah, it is important. Earlier in the week for coverage of Election Day, I had my journalism class go to the polling place that was at University of Albany campus. And before we went in there, we looked up the Board of Elections website and at the enrollment statistics so that they could try to put some context into the results of the election and how many voters are there in these districts and what's the breakdown of the voters. And something that the media has fallen down on consistently is what's the impact of the voters who are registered to vote but are not enrolled as Republicans or Democrats. In a lot of places, that's a pretty big number, enough to sway an election.
Mm. Remarkable notion. Well, we will be looking at a lot of this as the months go by here on the Media Project. We'll be looking at how the once and future president has an impact on American journalism and how the coverage goes. So we invite listeners to stick with us. This is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. I'm Rex Smith here with Judy Patrick and Barbara Lombardo and Miles Reed. By the way, you can share your thoughts with us, media@wamc.org, if you'd like to do that. And we will share your thoughts here.
You know, I'm looking forward to some good journalism. I think there will be. I think there'll be some great stories to come out of covering this administration. I mean, there were some great stories out of the last one. So get to work, you guys in Washington and around the country. Let's see what you can do.
Absolutely. That is really good stuff. And here, sitting in a state capital, a capital of America's now, what are we, the third largest state now?
Oh, we don't even want to. Number one. Well,
yeah,
we're number one. Used
to, there was a time. But we are lucky that there still is a vibrant, thriving press corps in the New York State Capitol, unlike most state capitals across the country. And it's being enhanced by the growth of some not-for-profits that are coming along, by new outlets that are replacing those that have diminished, and by collaborative efforts. I'm just looking at a story here from Public Broadcasting, how the Corporation Public Broadcasting, which is funded by the federal government, which funding is imperiled, by the way, by the Trump administration, by what he has said. But CPB has invested money, $2.25 million. Maybe that's not a lot, but they've invested money in stations in seven states and NPR to improve statehouse coverage. And I think that's really important, something that we need to think about as we look at where action happens that really matters to people's lives. Continuing on top of what's happening in the state is really important stuff.
Yeah, I think we're all very lucky in New York State journalists to be very optimistic about this journalism sustainability fund that is right on the horizon. If it all goes well, we should be able to qualify for a tax credit refund starting in January of 2025. It's a new direction around the country. New York was the first state to enact this, and so I think the policy will be watched how it rolls out. But I know at the Gazette we're very hopeful that we're going to be able to take advantage of that and hire at least three new reporters. That's our hope once it gets rolled out. So
wow. And remind me how that works. You get a tax credit on staffing.
Yeah. So qualifying news outlets can potentially get up to $300,000. And what it is, it's a 50% refund, and that's up to $50,000 for reporters. So in this market, and almost all of upstate New York, outside of New York City, that's a good sum that's going to help a lot of local journalists be able to, a lot of newspapers, outlets, be able to hire new reporters. So we're still waiting for some of the details to roll out about how that will work. But I think there's a lot of optimism there.
About 20 years ago, I remember at the Times Union, we turned down even workplace retraining for our composing room guys because we didn't want to have the strings that we thought might be attached. We didn't want to take money from the government. I think we've kind of gotten over that, you know?
I think so. I think it's just a necessity. And obviously, the details, we'll all have to figure out that. But most editors and publishers who I've spoken with are eager to try to apply for it. So,
Okay, on that point, that's the end of our time for today. Thoughtful conversation, folks. How about that? That was Miles Reed, you just heard from, editor of the Gazette in Schenectady. His predecessor, Judy Patrick, is sitting next to me, now vice president of the New York Press Association. Barbara Lombardo has been here, the executive editor of the Saratogian and the Record in some years past. And I'm Rex Smith, formerly of the Times Union. The Upstate American is where you can find me. I almost forgot who I was. We're grateful to our producer, David Gustina, for making all this possible. And we especially thank you for joining us this week once again. And we hope to see you next week on The Media Project.
She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments, she stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk. Now newspaper men meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's unk. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith. Judy Patrick, Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette. Barbara Lombardo, Adjunct Professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian and editor and Vice President of the Daily Gazette, Miles Reed. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
A lot of people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy's an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.